Well, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. Glad you could join me here today, and I think you are going to really like today's show. On Tuesday, I sat down with Kevin Love, the Cleveland Cavaliers forward. Cavs were in the middle of a road trip that swung through Chicago. We sat down, and we talked for about an hour. And we talked about everything from that first year in Cleveland to his relationship with LeBron to going from being perceived as kind of the fat kid of NBA prospects to really one of the best conditioned players in this league today. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, there's one very easy thing you can do to support it. Go to iTunes, give us a rating, post a comment. All that goes a long way towards making sure we do this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. I want to thank Kevin Love for joining me here on the podcast. I know it's been a long day traveling in to Chicago. And of course, you're only about a week removed from UCLA going out, man. Right. How tough was that?
It was really tough, but seeing how the I did a homer job on my bracket, of course, and had them winning it. Had Oregon also in the Final Four. But it was tough, but I knew them playing in Memphis was going to be like another home game for Kentucky, and always winning that second game against a team like that is very tough. And you know, I was upset that they lost, but you know, I'm excited for the next chapter for them and for, you know, Ball and Leaf and those guys.
So how invested do you get around tournament time? I mean, I went to Boston College and we suck, so I don't get into it. But how deep do you get into it?
You know, it's one of those things where, you know, we were the highest scoring team in all of the NCAA basketball, right?
Yeah.
Division One.
Yeah.
So I was really into their team this year. Obviously, I love Ball. I loved Alford. He, you know, was breaking a lot of records. 4-year guy, did a lot of things for UCLA. Obviously, playing for his dad and hit a ton of threes. TJ Leaf was awesome. Holiday, Welsh. I mean, shooting that 15-17 footer. Like, you know, he just seemingly would hit it every single time. So I really liked the makeup of their team, and that was just their starting five. So I was pretty, you know, pretty heavily invested. Made a donation to the school last year, so now I'm even more heavily invested. So I love watching UCLA, and I'm really into UCLA athletics. So,
all right, so I got to get your take then on LeVar Ball and how his antics there. I mean, right. He's great for media. I mean, you see him on TV, says a whole bunch of crazy stuff.
Sure.
But as an alum, as an NBA player who's going to be playing
right.
either against or with his son at some point, what do you think?
It makes my dad look like a saint. No, I think he loves his kids. I mean, some people will say it's over the top, but I think you know, I can't tell if he's you know, playing all of us or he's just, you know, really wants what's, you know, obviously he wants what's best for his kids, but you know, he's one of those you know, his dads that you'd see on, you know, the AAU circuit where you'd be like, okay, that guy's crazy. But I think, you know, LeVar's you know, has all his kids going Division One. Lonzo's a great player. He's going to be an unbelievable point guard, has the size. You saw what the numbers he put up this year. You know, I love the team that they had around him as well. You know, the younger one, was it Melo?
LaMelo, yeah.
LaMelo, you know, we'll see how he grows, but can really shoot it, loves the game. They all love the game. And, you know, I was a middle child, so I'm always rooting for the middle child. So you never know how that one's going to end up.
Is there a trickle-down effect, though, with, you know, maybe a target he's putting on Lonzo's back going to the pros?
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be the toughest thing for Lonzo, but I think they've been groomed and, you know, put in that situation really their whole life. Now it's just going to be taken to the next level. So it's going to be interesting to see how he responds to that, but he seems to take everything in stride. He knows what he wants. He's a pretty, you know, he's a kid that's pretty sure of himself. And, you know, I was around him a little bit this summer just from, you know, a few steps away, just being around the gym and lifting at UCLA. And he seems to, you know, have a good head on his shoulders. And, you know, you got to give a good testament to his parents for that.
So we're in Chicago, and right down the street, the McDonald's All-American game is going on this week. We're 10 years removed from your McDonald's.
It's here. Yeah, we were in Louisville.
10 years.
I played I wasn't in the Jordan Classic, but I played in the Round Ball Classic actually here in Chicago.
Yeah, but your McDonald's game, that was in Louisville, you're right. Do you remember that game? I was looking up that game.
Yes.
Do you know how unfair
our
the squads were?
Yes.
Like, you only won by two.
Yeah.
But let me just refresh your memory here of your team, and you know this, but Blake Griffin,
right.
James Harden, Derrick Rose. You go over to the East roster, and these are good players, don't get me wrong,
right.
But the best player on that team was O.J. Mayo.
Right.
The next best player, J.J. Hickson.
Right.
Johnny Flynn was on that team. Good players, but you've got the A squad there.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's not even fair, man.
We had a hell of a team. Our class was, I just remember looking back and looking at those All-American teams and thinking almost, I mean, damn near every guy got drafted and has played professional basketball. I mean, I wouldn't say it's unprecedented because then you have what, like, was it 03 or 04 where all those guys came out of high school?
Yeah.
Seemingly all those guys made it. I think that might have been, obviously LeBron's year, right?
Yeah, 03 was LeBron's year.
Right. So, I mean, that's another class that you look at and think, wow. But yeah, we had a hell of a squad. We had a hell of a squad.
You only won by 2 points.
Only won by 2 points. The jerseys did not fit at all. I was about 40 pounds heavier. Didn't quite look the same. Didn't quite move the same. But that was only won by two. Michael Beasley was MVP.
You were an accomplished player at that point, but being around all those guys, some of whom I'm sure you knew, some of them I'm sure you didn't, but was it, I mean, were you nervous in that moment, high school kid?
No. If anything, I was just eager to get out there. I'd played with those guys against those guys in AU tournaments and you know, ABCD camp, Nike camp for 3 or 4 years now, and then dating all the way back to, you know, whether it was Cocoa Beach, Florida in fifth grade, you know, when we go to our first national championships and say, okay, that guy's going to be good in a few years, or, you know, this guy's the number one ranked player when he's 9. I mean, it's so silly.
But scholarship offer.
Yeah. I mean, like, I can remember Taylor King committing to UCLA when he was like 6th or 7th grade. And I'm thinking, you know, this is a thing. Mm-hmm. So that was my first taste of it. And, you know, a lot like the Ball family, my dad groomed me for that sort of a thing. And I mean, that playing against those guys from early age really helped me.
I mean, did that, the game itself, I've been to a few of them. They're pointless. Like, it's all just up and down. I mean,
it's like playing in the NBA All-Star game when you're, you know, a stretch four. It's like, what are you going to do? You know?
That's not for you.
Yeah, I might get one pick and roll dunk, two hand, and then I'm going to shoot a few threes, drain a few threes, and that's
crowd groans when you shoot.
Yeah, like, off. like, throw it off the backboard to AD or something. So, I mean, that's a... You know, that's just the way it goes. But no, McDonald's All-American game, that I still remember that. And, you know, it's funny. I framed my jersey, 42 McDonald's All-American, and we had the red jerseys. We were the away team, considered the away team. And I mean, that jersey is like a quad X. It's not, and it didn't fit, but it was rather large, to say the least.
You mentioned your size back then, and I remember one of the last stories I wrote about you at SI was your coming back from the shoulder injury and the conditioning it took for you to get there, and you've become one of the best conditioned guys in the league today, and it's funny that became the case. I distinctly remember your draft year. A criticism of you in the top five was, and I'll just, it's bluntly, it's, he's fat, he's going to get fatter. Right. Like, that was it. It was like, there was one team that told me they thought you had like an eating disorder and you would just eat your way out of the league at some point. I mean, did you hear that stuff back then? Or maybe not as bluntly, but...
Actually, it makes me laugh now because of how into health and wellness I am. And I always saw myself being that guy. Mm-hmm. I just had to get away from... obviously you have to develop better habits and everybody adds stuff to their game or off the floor. They get better at, you know, watching film, taking care of their bodies. But for me, it was, you know, just... figuring out how to eat and, you know, the daily grind of the NBA and a full 82 game schedule and being able to come back and do it the next year and, you know, potential playoff games. And I think longevity becomes such a big thing and a big part of what we do. And that was something that was actually easy for me to transition into. I mean, I remember in you know, high school, and my mom was a great cook. So I would, you know, she would come home after working at the hospital. She worked in neonatal intensive care with preemie babies. And my sister was a preemie. We don't have to get into that. But she would come home. She would, you know, make us up food and everybody would eat and then go back to what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, oh, okay, mom, I'll wait for you and eat with you. So that was my way of getting seconds and maybe thirds. So then when we got to college, it was training table. I mean, we would have a, you know, Ben Hallen practice was a hell of a practice.
Yeah.
He was a disciplinarian, but he was a hard coach to, he coached us. You know, some coaches, you know, they don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think. It was Frank Martin, who South Carolina?
South Carolina, Frank Martin, yeah.
He just had a great, great quote about, you know, kids haven't changed. We've changed. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't allow them to coach. You know, we're expecting less of kids. Mm-hmm. Coach Hallen was the same way. He expected a lot of us, and he made sure that he got the best out of us. So that was another thing about him that I absolutely love. But getting back to the food, after a Ben Hallen practice, we would go and, you know, eat training table, which is basically a buffet of whatever kind of food you want. And that's not a good thing to put in front of a hungry 19-year-old kid. That
college in general, not a good place to learn good eating habits.
No, not at all. So that was something that I had to learn my first couple of years in the league, but I got a quick dose of reality when, you know, I always say there's nothing like, we had a hell of a, we were Pac-10 at the time. We played, you know, I played Taj Gibson, and then, you know, we'll come back and play the Lopez twins.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty solid competition there, but there's nothing like then doing that and then going to play Dirk in Dallas and fly home and play KG the next night. It's just not, there's no way to replicate that. So I thought, what's something that could help me and give me an edge and expand my game? And, you know, eating was a, you know, definitely a big part of it. Now, I mean, what, it's funny because I talk to Tristan Thompson all the time. I'm like, okay, you've never been where I was, and I never want you to be there, but I have been that bigger kid, that fat kid. I'm not going back. Mm-hmm. So no, it's something that we joke about, and it's definitely plays a big part of it. And eating is so much a part of what we do every day.
What was the hardest thing to give up for you as you sort of transition into better habits?
I'll tell you the easiest thing.
Okay.
And I wish it was the same for everybody because of what it, you know, does to your liver and just kills you. And, you know, I like wine as well. It's in, you know, all alcohol is, mm-hmm. you know, fermented grapes. I mean, it's sugar.
Right.
So I think sugar was the easiest thing to give up for me. And I can't tell you how great I feel not eating sugar. I mean, mm-hmm. it's easy to just pass it up. I get my sugar from fruit and it's high fiber, blah, blah, blah. But the hardest thing I would say is, you know, probably like, because in the summer when I travel, it's tough to not go for the pastas or the, you know, you get like a French bakery, or you wake up in the morning and you order food, you know, from any hotel in Europe. You know, whether, say, you're in Paris, they're going to give you the full tray of, you know, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So it's just having that at your disposal and, you know, being able to, you know, reach out and have it there. It's, you know, that's tough to put down. But, you know, I always say discipline is deciding between what you want now and what you want most. And I'm just like, I want to play for in this league as long as I can. Every decision, including something as easy as what I want to eat, what I want to put in my mouth, and what I want to, you know, go about my day feeling like, that's what I think about.
It feels like teams have gotten better with what they are giving
huge.
You guys.
Oh, we're unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's
a lot of teams are going that way too, whether it's sports performance or something, but there's huge. It's not the buffet of fried chicken anymore.
It's not. It's really every little thing is dissected. And I mean, you talk about health and wellness and diet overall. It's such a big part of what we do. It gets overlooked a lot of the time, but not, you talk about our sports performance guys. I mean, we have our director of sports performance, Alex Moore, and our head strength coach, Derek, they always make sure we have the right food on the plane. We have the right food after practice, before practice. And I mean, we're properly fueled to withstand this, you know, rigorous season. And, you know, we want to play in June. So that, you know, it's just something that's not overlooked, and we love that.
It's got to be one of those things too for you that once you start seeing results, you're like, "This is great. I'm going to stick with this." You know, I'm going to keep setting different goals and keep hitting them every single year.
Absolutely. And for me, I'm like, you know, I go week by week, kind of month by month. But you probably lose. I don't know a percentage on it, but you lose a good amount of muscle mass throughout the NBA season just because there's so many games coming at you. You know, you can't get all the lifts in that you want. You can't, you know, train like you do in the summer when you're at, you know, almost your peak shape and you're making sure that, you know, your body is prepared for the season. So you gotta make sure that you do or get whatever edge that you possibly can. And I don't think as an organization that's lost on us.
Mm-hmm. So looking at the way you played this season, you know, right around 20 points per game. All the numbers across the board are up. I know you get asked this all the time, but what's changed? And you probably read all the time, well, it's he's, you know, different coach, different this. But, I mean, just put it out there. Like, what's different this year as opposed to the last two?
I think a couple things. Just first and foremost, it's Ty. I mean, I just it's not – it doesn't go overlooked by me that he's, you know, he's put me in the right positions. He came to me right after he took over last season and just said, I just the same thing with Champ James Jones. He just said, just be yourself. Just don't be afraid to be yourself and, you know, pick your spots, but just play the game. And I think, you know, when they dumbed it down like that and showed me on film where I could be effective and I knew I could be effective from, you know, playing in this league and having success, you know, that made it easier for me. So, you know, once Ty took over the rest of the year, I felt great and comfortable out there. So, you know, confidence is, you know, if you even waver it a little bit, I'll never say I lost confidence, but if it wavers a little bit and you don't necessarily know where you want to be, you know, pick your spots, where you want to be aggressive, where you want to take your shots, where you want to be aggressive on the defensive end or be effective, it just, then it messes with your efficiency mm-hmm. and it messes with, you know, your mind. It messes with your approach. You know, thing you don't know what you're going to get into coming into every single game. And mm-hmm. instead of being, you know, aggressive and being an aggressor, then the other team is dictating what you're doing on both ends of the floor. So I think I give a lot of credit to Ty. I give a lot of credit to, you know, obviously us winning a championship takes a big weight off of your back. And then just overall, like I said, getting back to being myself was big, but that wasn't without a few growing pains and, you know, taking a step back and looking at what I could do.
So when you go back and do an autopsy on that first year, is it just overthinking for you? Is it thinking of trying to be something that you weren't?
I really think that, I really think for me, I wasn't used to being on the perimeter that much. And I wasn't used to, you know, not filling the lane and ducking in and getting offensive rebounds and just being far away from the basket. So I think Ty has thrown me into different lineups, playing the five or playing the four and pushing me to go, you know, go towards the basket and get all the offensive and defensive rebounds. And, you know, one of the first things he said to me was, I need you to be our lead rebounder every single night. Hmm. So I thought, okay, well, that's a whole different mentality. Because when you define roles on a team, especially a championship-level team, you become great in that role. Or you try to, you know, excel in that role. And then you continue to, you know, add a few things to that and, you know, end up helping the team in any single way. So, you know, I definitely give a lot of credit to him, a lot of credit to Bron as well, being our main leader. Kai getting me involved, and then just everybody else filling in and playing their roles and being great in their roles.
Nobody wants to see somebody get fired, but did you need a coaching change for all this to kind of happen? Did you need a new voice to?
I don't know. Coach Blatt, he had obviously a great record. We were first in the East, but you know, something needed to happen. I don't know if that was it. But you know, that's the way it played out, and you know, we ended up winning a championship, but it didn't come without. A lot of, I mean, backlash is the wrong word I'm thinking of, but it didn't come with, you know, those growing pains I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, you know, easy to start. There were times where, you know, we come out against a team that had, you know, shouldn't have beat us and we get our ass whooped. So that wasn't fun. Mm-hmm. But those are the times that we had to sit down and define our roles and, you know, figure out where we were going to get better. And the big thing for us was making sure that we were dialed in on all of our film work. Our walkthroughs were very professional. I just think overall, just everybody knowing that this isn't going to last forever. It's so fragile. It can all be taken away, you know, so fast. Somebody can go down with an injury. Another guy can go down with an injury. I mean, you saw that, you know, in the finals the first year. And I was Eastern Conference Corner Finals. My shoulder was ripped out and, you know, I wasn't going to play the rest of the season. Kyrie went down game one and we still went to Game 6 and NBA Finals, but just that firepower against such great teams is what you need.
Did it sting at all not getting to play in this All-Star game? I mean, all that you had to kind of, you know, build up to, you know, sort of rebuild and build up at this point, was it at all a little
not
bit like,
really.
I wanted that? Or
not right. I definitely wanted to be there and wanted to play in the game, mm-hmm. but... Yeah,
be that stretch four in the All-Star game.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, get those couple shots
get those cheers, maybe
get off the board and not put up a donut. But no, the I mean, just human nature, human instinct, of course. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just and from that aspect, I felt I wanted to play and wanted to be there, and it was Mardi Gras and But once I found out that I just had to get that little piece out of my knee and was going to be out 6 weeks or whatever, I thought, okay, this All-Star break is going to buy me a week and I'm going to be able to get back, you know, sooner mm-hmm. and not miss that many games. Because, you know, when I went down with my hand my fifth year or whatever, and I missed, mm-hmm. I played 18 games. It was the worst season of my life. I hated it. I hated missing games. So I just wanted to use that week and try to get back early. And, you know, the game, especially after watching it, it didn't mean they got to fix it.
Oh, they got to fix it. Tell me then, how do you fix it?
I don't know. I'm the wrong guy to ask. Yeah.
I just shoot threes.
Yeah. It's like the Nike we talked about earlier, the Nike camp. You had to have like a three pass rule. If you get over half court, it's not a fast break. You got three pep, but that, you know, nobody's going to.
Yeah.
But I love the Saturday night's great. The dunk contest was terrible this year, but I blame Zach LaVine, my UCLA boy. No, but it's tough because I love the 3-point competition.
Does money change it? Like incentivizing, does that change it? I mean, and maybe it's not money in your pocket, but like you have a charity, everyone's got a charity.
I mean, I would hope so, but it has to be the right number. And if I don't like saying that because we already make, especially if you're an All-Star too, you're making so much and you're getting to put a ball through a hoop. I know it sounds stupid to say that, but I mean, it's a game that we've been playing since we were young and toddlers and, mm-hmm. you know, we're blessed with the ability to be able to do it, but it's tough to say, add more money and we'll play harder. Like the fans are looking at us like, really? You know? So I think it definitely everything starts from the fans and works its way out. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you fix it, but
I mean, nobody's got their All-Star game right. There is no good All-Star game in sports. Like
somebody mentioned something to me though. They said, look at the 89 or 88 or 87 All-Star game and tell me that wasn't great. Cause it was so competitive mm-hmm. and guys were, I mean, going at each other's necks. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's become such a show. But let me back up. Adam Silver, if there's anybody that's going to get it right, he's going to get it right. He's already, you know, what has it been? How many years from now?
Three or four.
Like that, and he's, and Mark Tatum too. Those guys are really bright. So they're going to find a way. They're going to get with the players and there's going to be a back and forth and they're going to figure it out. But,
you know why that 80s game was probably good. I don't remember it specifically, but those guys hated each other. Those guys were
exactly.
I mean, you guys don't hate each other. You guys are all friends.
I do agree with that. Mm-hmm. And it is funny because at the end of the day, in the back of your head, you don't have any friends in this game. Mm-hmm. And to that point, you know, you go in unless it's somebody that you would, you know, play like Russell Westbrook. I'm going to go and, you know, give him a hug after the game, tell him, you know, best to your family. Hope I see you guys soon, blah, blah, where you go in the summer, so on and so forth. But everybody's trying to take what you have mm-hmm. in this league. I mean, especially when you're the defending champs too. I mean, every single night we're getting everybody's best shot. And every single night, you were the power forward of the, you know, world championship Cleveland Cavaliers. Oh, I want to come and I want to take what you have every single night. I'm coming at your head. So it is odd that when it, you know, gets to sort of a game like that, it is showmanship and it's crowd pleasing and kids love it, but it's not good basketball.
No.
And good basketball is always when it's, you know, super competitive and that sort of, you know, human nature to you know, try to take that other guy's spot or whatever it may be. It just becomes better. It's just better basketball.
I think people can live, just my opinion, but I think people can live with, you know, 3.5 quarters of bad basketball. Right. If you get a final half quarter wherever, because totally. You guys start to like really get into it. Then it becomes pride, it seems like, out there when you're late in the game. The problem with this past year is you didn't have that. Right. It was a blowout. And so you had 48 minutes of awfulness that everybody had to kind of answer for right. there.
Well, I remember, what was it, 2011? We were in L.A., And it was, yeah, Kobe won MVP that year, I believe. And he can't let himself not be, I mean, he's Kobe Bryant. He's just so competitive. It just is, it's just in him. And he looked at me and he told me, we talked about rebounding the basketball. And I think at the time I was averaging 15. He came in, he's like, I'm gonna lead the whole game in rebounding tonight. Because and every time he get rebounding, he look at me and just that competitive nature and trying to get something done and get something out of it was just, it's just in him. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, somehow I think that's lost in the All-Star game, but I'm not going to say I don't love watching Bron throw it off the glass and dunk it three or four times. And, mm-hmm. you know, Giannis, how big of a freak he is, you know, dunking everything, and AD with his, 50 points. So, I mean, it's, and then Russ getting hot. I mean, I still watched the game. I still looked at what people did and, you know, saw what went down, but it's just, they'll fix it.
Giannis has got to be a nightmare to look forward to in the coming years.
How old is he?
And he's like 21, yeah, 22 or something.
No, he's
like that.
He's really a freak. I saw a highlight of him the other night, and I mean, it seems like every game is another thing where you just shake your head, but he had a windmill from, you know, seemingly it looked like the 3-point line.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just kind of shake my head and think, God, the kid's going to be really special.
He does like the Tom Chambers dunks in the end on the old NBA Live games, yeah. where you're just dunking from three. Like, it seems like he gets further and further out
right.
when he starts to take that step.
Yeah, and it's almost like, yeah, Tom Chambers uses the leverage from the guy and takes it like three more steps, three more stories.
No, you knew coming in the pressure cooker that you were joining, the team you were joining, what it was going to be all about. But when you look back, was there something that you maybe weren't anticipating, something you weren't as prepared as you thought you were going to be for?
I don't think you can ever be prepared for for you guys. No, just how much attention was going to be paid in the spotlight. Like, I knew I could wrap my mind around what it was going to be like, but until you actually come into Chicago at 3 a.m. on a Tuesday night or a Monday night, and you turn the corner and there's 40 or 50 people waiting for you. So I go, okay, this is different. Mm-hmm. This is different than the 5 or 7 you would get, you know, at this time. So I think that and the media landscape now and you know, everybody's so heavily involved. It there's no way to prepare for that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our locker rooms are full before the game, after the game, and, you know, our media days are, you know, happening, that sort of thing. So I think that was something to adjust to, but that was pretty quick. The mm-hmm. other thing was really having to bring it every single night and becoming a better professional. So it's really helped me, and I think I've become a better teammate in some offhanded way, a better person and matured a lot. So I think it's this whole situation has really helped me, and you know, I wanted to come here and win, and you know, I've been able to do that. So it's been, I mean, last year was really the greatest year of my life. I mean, it was 27, and you know, that 2016 was unbelievable.
You became instantly a focal point, a lightning rod. When things weren't going right, it was, you know, look at your numbers, look at something was going on, the trade talks you heard every day about. I mean,
sure.
Did that wear on you? Was that?
That's kind of what I meant in saying that it was just, that was different, but that's how it evolved, you know, because when, you know, if we're looking for somebody on the other side that was a scapegoat, it was David Blatt, mm-hmm. if things were going right. And then on the player side, it was going to be me, you know, so it was just one of those things you just learn to have, I guess you don't learn to have thicker skin, but that grows on you. And I think,
how long does it take you to learn that?
Well, I had never gone through that. Mm-hmm. I had gone through, hey, I want to go to a contending team, or
right.
I want to go to a team that's going to win. Didn't matter where, but I think it probably took till after All-Star break and thinking, okay, this could potentially happen every year. Mm-hmm. Who knows? And this is the business, and this is the way it is, and this is the way, you know, I mentioned the media landscape is, and so many eyes are on you all the time with a team that's, you know, in the East or even around the entire NBA landscape that's supposed to be one of the best teams, or if not the best team. So if it's not me, it's going to be somebody else. And if one guy is shooting bad for two or three nights, or, you know, this guy's hurt, or, you know, they're going to look for an out. And it taught me not to look for an excuse, a built-in excuse. It taught me, you always say don't listen to it, but everybody's on their phones. Mm. And, you know, you have your friends that don't know any better and don't live in this thing with you, or a girlfriend or a significant other or a parent that goes, you know, screw this person, or don't listen to this person. And then it becomes a thing. But it took me probably till after that first All-Star break and, you know, a lot of talks with David Griffin, just being like, you're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? And I think in dissecting film and James Jones, I mean, he's been like a rock for our entire team. I mean, he's the consummate pro. He doesn't play much, but there's not a number. There's nothing that can quantify what he does for the team. And for everybody, even, you know, the last few weeks or 2 years ago, or, you know, from what Bron says in Miami, he's like, you know, his favorite player ever. And yeah. He's one of those guys that
you guys all talk about him all the time.
All talk about him all the time. And he is so, he has like that old man wisdom. And he,
at the ripe age of what, like 36, 37?
Yeah. What? 35 or 30. Yeah. Something like that. So he he's one of those guys that you hope you have around your entire life, because he just is a great sounding board and knows what to say and has been there, done that. So he definitely helped me early on. And it was great to be on a veteran team. So they knew, they'd be like, oh man, we've been here before, we know that. And it was pretty easy to get over, is the wrong word, but just let it go.
You at one point, I think you passed Brook Lopez as the most Twitter traded person on the market.
Right.
I mean, Brook was
never changed too. I was laughing with some of our local media this year. I was like, you got, I said last year too, but I said, you guys aren't getting rid of me. Now it's oh, you know, he's playing so well and he's on the All-Star team again, and
your value skyrocketed.
He's 20-11, and let's trade him for this guy, or it's, you know, it's Melo now, we want him in New York. And it's like, oh, now I'm on the other side. It's so silly and fickle. And, you know, sometimes it's like that word fragile is always thrown around. It's just it's funny.
Were you at the point that you had to have ignored the Carmelo stuff? You had to.
Well, I saw you in New York when all that stuff was going on.
Yeah. I mean, that wasn't going to happen. Like, no. Some of the other stuff I can see, maybe, but that was never, like, that was one of the weirder rumors,
right,
that just connected two friends in LeBron and Carmelo and put them on the same team. That never made any sense.
Yeah. I don't think it did either, but, you know, I know from, I mean, I've always been a big Carmelo fan. I mean, but I didn't want to get traded for him. it was like when I saw Klay Thompson at USA Basketball before I got traded to Cleveland. He's like, man, we grew up together. You know, we played Little League. It's hard to get Klay talking, but he was basically like, man, I don't want us to be the guys that are traded for each other. And I was like, all right, yeah, I get that. So I ended up on Cleveland. I got the call from Bron, and, you know, this ended up happening, and it's been great. And it's funny how things become, I don't know, such a big deal when they're not. You know, you could just pull something out of the air, and now it could be true. Or the sources thing has been, you know, that's been the last several years now. But I just think that everybody has a voice. Anything could be made a story. Mm-hmm.
When you hit free agency in that summer, how sure were you that you were coming back?
To Cleveland?
Cleveland.
Oh, I mean, 12:01.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that was based, I mean, what happened to that? I mean, I know there was that meeting everybody talked about. And
I thought it would have been, in my heart of hearts, I wanted to win a championship and win it here. And I felt like I got that literally taken away from me in the playoffs. And I got my first taste, loved it. And, you know, really in that kind of that last part of the season and then into the playoffs, we were playing great basketball. I thought, oh, this is what I'm talking about. I love this. This is great basketball. I mean, we were moving the ball, we were punching into the post, we were, you know, letting all of our, you know, defense and getting into guys dictate what we did on the offensive end. So I think that's what I talked to my agent, Jeff Schwartz, and I basically just told him, I said, I'm in. Mm-hmm. Like I had known that for a pretty good amount of time. And yeah, 12:01 came, I got on the phone with Griff and, you know, most of the front office guys, and, you know, he said, welcome back. And that was it.
Did you wonder in that first year if this was going to be long-term for you? I mean, it is now, and you're here and you guys are every year, you know, at the top, but did you wonder in that first year if this was going to be it?
Yeah. I mean, I think human instinct for me was thinking, God, is this really the best it's going to be? And for me, I always, it's like when I was the fat kid in high school, I always saw it being better.
No, the executives called you fat so many times. It was
yeah, right. No, I actually have a super funny story about that, but all right. Anyways, I think it was, obviously it crossed my mind. Yeah. I thought, yeah, God, is this as good as it's going to be? Cause I know I can do so much more personally and I can help this team so much more. But my agent, he told me, listen, I've been in this league. I've been around athletes for this long, X amount of years. And, you know, if you can, you know, have your health, you can, you know, live and be happy off the floor and you can make money, you know, that's, you know, what you need to look at. Like what is your happiness depend upon? I thought, you know, I want to be able to win basketball games. I came here to win. So I thought, okay, win. Can I obviously get paid while doing it?
Which, right.
You know, if you're in the league, you're getting paid handsomely. And, you know, happiness was a big thing for me as far as, you know, I wanted to be happy where I lived. And I think off the floor, I wasn't too happy because I was in a place where, you know, I couldn't go outside and I wasn't at a home where I, you know, it wasn't where I needed to be. So every time I went home and had a bad game or it was, you know, something where, you know, we came home from a long road trip and there was, you know, a thousand people in the lobby. I'm thinking, God, I don't want to see anybody. So it was just, my stress was just through the roof having, you know, if I'm going into work, I'm thinking, okay, this is my only safe place and the court is my only safe place. And I go home, I don't want to go. So there was a lot of extracurricular stuff that wasn't necessarily working for me. So those were changes that I knew I had to make coming back. And my life in Cleveland has been, you know, a 10 since.
Your relationship with LeBron was dissected from day one. And look, some of it was outside guessing. Some right. of it was based on his own, I mean, you know, his leadership style. He pokes and prods a little bit and he tries to get stuff out of you. How would you characterize that relationship, how it's evolved, I guess?
Yeah, I think a very large majority of it was so stupid. It was so dumb. I mean, I come into practice and be like, really, again? And he's like, that's, you know, that's just them trying to, you know, do their thing. But I think early on it was more
with what, like a rumor or something that you read out there or something with the really again.
Or see, I tried to stay away from it, but then it'd get asked. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think one, it was me being smarter. Another was maybe even more so was just me learning. It was a big learning process for me going from, you know, the number one guy in Minnesota to being, you know, the third guy here and figuring out, you know, where to be on the floor and, you know, how to go about my business. And, you know, I sound like a broken record, but that's how it was. And I think, but more than anything, it was knowing how to win, being a better professional, being a better teammate. And that took a little bit of time. And those growing pains along with, you know, Bron having, you know, so much attention in that first year and coming back. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that was what people thought, oh, you know, there's something going on here. But yeah, I think the relationship has evolved over time. And, you know, we have one of the funniest teams I've ever been around in my entire life. And we have a really, really solid group of guys. And it's not just the relationship between us two. It's, you know, Kyrie and and RJ and Channing and Champ and Swish and I mean, everybody's different. Everybody has like their little quirks, and everybody, you know, really, I was just said recently, like the was it 2003 Boston or 2004 where they came back from 4 days in October? That
Red Sox, yeah, 04.
Yeah, 04. And it was like the idiots. But
yeah.
Like, I mean, great bunch. The best way. Great. But that's what we are. We have so many different personalities. If you're around us, it's like infectious. You want to be around us. Mm-hmm. And that's no different.
Was that a relationship with LeBron that you wondered it would work too? I mean,
no,
you always thought that it was going to find a way to, yeah.
And that was a conversation I had with him too. I said, you just gotta trust that we will make right the ship. We will make it work. And I'm not talking from a relationship standpoint. I'm talking about, you know, on the floor. Mm-hmm. And once that was all taken care of and we knew that everybody was about the right things, everything else was fine.
Does he have a distinct leadership style there? I mean, it seems like he's intense a lot and he's always on and he's always pushing.
Yeah. And he is hardest working. I mean, he's one of those guys that like does not take his talent and his otherworldly, you know, gifts for granted. I mean, he works. And I think that, speaking of infectious, that is infectious. I mean, he's a guy, he wakes up early, he gets his work in, he's to the gym early, stays late, takes care of his body. Every morning before a game, he's in there with all of us. You know, he's getting extra shooting. Like he's that guy. Mm-hmm. I mentioned consummate pros, I mentioned workers like James Jones, guy who's been around him. He's that guy. And his leadership is no different. He is always leading by example. He's always trying to get better. Listen, everybody has, you know, their faults, whether like it's, you know, me or it's bad body language or, you know, we don't always say the right thing, but everybody's human. And he's what, like Time Magazine or whoever it was just rated him the top 10 leader in the world.
Mm-hmm. I mean, 11. Yeah. Right. 11, there. Yeah.
I mean, he's that guy. So yeah, when he approaches something and he says something, it's, you know, people are paying attention. I can remember like Rick Alleman. I have so much respect for him. I had so much respect for him when he was coaching me. And he wasn't like loud, hey, listen to me type of guy. But when he spoke, you were dialed. Mm-hmm. Like you were dialed in. He was some guy that, you know, you knew I'd been there, done that before. And I mean, Bron's done everything in this league and it's still continuing to grow. So I think guys, you know, follow his lead because he leads by example and he is that guy.
When the rumors hit their peak, did you ever feel the need to go to him and ask him, do you want me here? I mean, do you want to keep this thing together?
No. I think the only thing he ever asked of me was just to play hard, play hard every possession. Because for me, I think, and he was right, because there'd be times where I go, you know, I'm basically just doing wind sprints out here. What am I doing? And he's like, just play hard and things will right and things will work for you. And I mean, that made it easy for me. So I think, sure, there were ways that I could have been more effective and maybe would have helped me out. But that sacrifice, I think, then led to, you know, us being, you know, the champs. And in some way, that helped us. And, you know, it's helped me become a better player and therefore pick my spots this year and be more comfortable and, you know, so on and so forth.
So here you guys are again, doing it once again, leaving that door open, people wondering, right. You know, you did it last year, made the coaching change, all of a sudden you run through the playoffs again. I'm sure you'd be glad to see March kind of go away, the way that things have gone. Is this, I mean, from your perspective, is this something that you're just a bump on the road that you're dealing with and get past, or is there something you're concerned with?
Well, I also think that teams have gotten better.
Yeah, I was going to get to that, but yeah.
Teams have definitely gotten better. And just if we're looking at just the East too, I mean, yep. Washington has gotten better. Boston has gotten better. You know, there's other teams like, you know, Toronto's going to
get Lowry
back.
Toronto, which hates you guys. It hates us.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking and they're, you know, going to get Lowry back. And, you know, they're a solid team that seems to keep getting better. And then there's teams like we played – Detroit last year, they were the eighth seed.
Yeah.
I mean, that had to be one of the tougher eight seeds in a while. I mean, with how they play, how physical they are under Stan and you know, with Drummond and you know, coming off of that pick and roll and rolling, it was a good test for us, and it set us up for really the rest of the playoffs. But I think you know, we will right the ship. We always do. I mean, there was January too. People think March, but they forget January. January was not pretty. But I think I do believe that we will right the ship because we always have, and it's becoming crunch time here now. The only thing that I don't like is that I don't like, it's like cramming for an exam. I don't like to do that. I like to accumulate the knowledge over time and then at the end kind of brush up on some things and get my rest and come in well prepared and, you know, with my mind right. It's the same thing here. It's practicing good championship habits. It's you know, making sure in the film sessions and the walkthroughs that we're dialed in, making that happen. And I don't even care if it shows up in the win column at this point. I mean, I do as far as seeding goes, but if we play great stretches of basketball and we look at the film and say, this is how we need to play, it's so much easier for me, at least for me and a lot of our guys being visual learners and visual guys, to then practice that and do that out on the floor again. So I think that, at least for me, and getting my mind right is probably the biggest thing. But I think we're very close. And, you know, I think it's, we just stop the ball too much. Maybe I shouldn't say play too much one-on-one basketball, but we're a pick-and-roll team, get it to opposite sides of the floor. And defensively, when we decide we want to be good or want to be great or want to be one of the better teams, we can be that.
East has gotten better. You're right about that. Yeah. I mean, even the first round. I mean, I watched Miami play the other night, and their record's not great, but I would not. They're
it's
relentless.
Not indicative of how
they're
good they are.
They're relentless how they
they're
play.
They're relentless. Dragic has been awesome. Dion has stepped up and hit. I mean, he's a shot maker, shot taker. But
even down the bottom there, I mean, Milwaukee, everybody thought they were going to fold after Jabari went out, Chris down, Middleton. Right? The first round, I mean, I would argue that this is probably going to be your toughest Eastern Conference.
Too,
toughest Eastern Conference bracket that you've had in 3 years,
sure.
I think. That. And then you look at the top with the way Boston's playing and the confidence they have and everybody.
Yeah, and a lot of those places are not easy to play. Mm. I mean, I don't know what our record has been in Washington or Boston or those type of places, but those aren't easy places to play for anybody. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, you always find out what kind of man you are, what kind of team you are when you're put in that sort of a situation. So I think we're ready for it or we will be ready for it. And, you know, we love that kind of, you know, maybe we need to get hit in the mouth one of these days, the next, you know, couple weeks here, but we'll be ready.
You should just go to Fenway again and start another shitstorm.
Right.
Out in Boston.
Listen, like as I already prefaced it or mentioned the 2014, but
yes.
I've always been, well, yeah, for the most part, I've always loved Boston. I've always loved those old parks, but I'll be back. I'll be back. So you heard it here. I'll be back, and it will have nothing to do with me playing in Boston
or
anything like that. Yeah, I'm going back.
Let me finish with this. The shitstorm you guys started last week with the Clipper game and sitting out, and all of a sudden it's a league-wide
memo. I didn't do it.
It became, well, no, clearly, but it became a week-long story.
Sure.
Over a couple of games. It was your game, and it was the Golden State game against San Antonio, nationally televised games. Surprised that everyone is so worked up about this?
A little bit. Here I am taking myself out of it. It's not my fault. But I wasn't supposed to play in the back-to-backs yet, so they wanted me to have a couple days rest and then play Sunday. So I played Thursday night, came back for the first time against Utah, and then they thought, okay, we want to see how, you know, we're going to travel Friday. You're not going to play Saturday, you can play Sunday. I said, okay, no problem. And then Kyrie went out with his leg, I think it was like fourth quarter of that game against Utah, and Bron was like, okay, I got this. You know, Bron's playing 40-plus nights on, you know.
Big minutes, too.
Big minutes. Really big minutes, and he And we need him to do that in order for us to be great and to win. But, you know, it comes at a toll, and there is games that, you know, he might need to take off. And with how it worked out, we wanted to get everybody back and playing together. And I was already sitting out for Saturday. So, okay, maybe it is my fault. Kyrie takes a seat for one game, rests his legs, and comes back out. And, you know, Bron wanted to play. And, you know, Coach Lou said, no, we're gonna sit you so everybody can be out there and playing together. Comes back, and, you know, we beat the Lakers, and we big three scores 101 points of our 125 or whatever it is. So, yeah, I am a little surprised because, you know, some guys on our team have been to six straight finals and logged a ton of minutes. And, you know, Kyrie played in the Olympics over the summer. I'm just coming back from a knee injury. And on top of that, it's not like, you know, Pop is always the greatest example because he's the greatest coach. Mm-hmm. But he's been doing that for years. Maybe not at the rate that, you know, we have, but...
But when he says it works, he can point to 40-year-old Tim Duncan and 37, I think, year old Manu Ginobili,
sure,
and 34-year-old Tony Parker, who is still playing at high levels. And he says that it helps them in the season. It helps them long term.
For sure.
He has proof. It's not like he's saying it. He has proof that that's why I never...
The proof is there.
I never understood.
Listen, I have so much respect for Pop that, I mean, if he says something and he says it works... I'm going to think, okay, it works. So I think that proof is there. He goes beyond being a coach. He manages so well. I think he manages, and he's managed those guys so well. And those are Hall of Fame type players, guys that will, that are going to go into late May and June and be difference makers for them. So they absolutely need the rest, where a regular season game, you know, to ask if there's a problem with resting guys, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I know that when, you know, you give 23 the rest and you give 2 the rest, those guys come out and they're going to show out the next game and come to play.
And I wrote this, so I don't mind saying it, that, you know, you guys are trying, it's strategic. You're trying to get somewhere in
for
June.
Sure.
My biggest issue is the teams that right now are trying to lose.
Right.
And there are a number of them. I mean, you saw Devin Booker go for 70 the other night. They lost that game because they had their starters on the bench. They lost by 10.
Right.
He goes for 7, lose by 10. I don't understand where
Lakers
is the uproar.
Are doing the same thing.
Where is the uproar for this to
agreed.
Have? Are they not get? Do we not care about local TV deals? Do we not care about local fans? Do we only care about ESPN, ABC types of games? I mean, I wrote it, so I can't fathom why that's not a bigger deal.
And I think what the Lakers are doing it too with you know, two of their guys that made $130-140 million over there.
Now Nick Young is basically sidelined.
Right. And they're healthy. So, you know, it's tough to say, you know, of course they're going to look at us and say that's the team, because like we mentioned earlier, we are under the magnifying glass. We are in the pressure cooker. So it's, you know, a fine line. And there's so many layers to this thing, but I don't think there's anything you can do about it. You know, and it gives other guys an opportunity to go out there and play, because we need other guys to see minutes, because, you know, we had points last year in throughout the, I'm thinking maybe game six of the finals. You know, I go down with two fouls early on, and Dante Jones comes in and makes two, hits a couple free throws, has a couple, I mean, what, offensive rebound, defensive rebound, gets a huge stop, and, you know, he was able to play towards season's end, and he made huge, huge, huge plays for us. So I think it's good for other guys to see minutes, especially even if it is, you know, a local game or a nationally televised game, and they're able to make plays, because we're going to need that down the stretch.
Yeah, I'm all for guys doing that sporadically. It's the month long. And let me, I have a solution, because I don't think this lottery reform is going to work, and I don't think it should work either. I think the lottery is fine as it is. You need to have some of these small market teams have
parity,
that first pick.
Yeah, I get that.
Here's my solution. Stats are cumulative, and at the end of the year, everything's divided by 82. So here's, it's. I'm saying this because I think that an Eric Bledsoe or a Brandon Knight might be less likely to accept just sitting on the bench and have their numbers slashed at the end of the season if it's going to affect their bottom line. They go from an 18-point per game score to a 13-point. It's not necessarily fair, because it's not the players that are saying, sit me down, but I think you'll see more resistance to the end of the year benching if it's affecting numbers.
That's interesting because, yeah, then, you know, if you're sitting at, you know, 20 something odd points and you're dividing that, right, and then it's going to drop you down to 17 if you miss 12 games. Yeah, I think, you know, film doesn't lie, numbers don't lie, you know, so that's interesting. I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, that was just my theory. I throw it out there.
Brilliant, Chris.
Do you want to tell your fat kid executive story before you go?
Oh, I don't know if I can mention where, well, let's say it like this. Sure. I had a guarantee at 7 and I worked out for every team minus, I'm trying to think who had the number one pick that year, Chicago. Worked out for every team. Rose, yeah. So you can maybe fill in the blanks, but it was basically the same kind of thing that you had mentioned about he's going to eat himself out of the league. And you can imagine, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm doing my, you know, they must have turned the heat on in the room and the thermostat was at like 78 and I'm in this, you know, I'm in this sweater with a tie and jeans that don't fit me right. And I'm sweating and I'm haven't eaten and I'm hungry. And these executives from the team, front office guys are asking me, you know, what the questions are, you know, kind of condescending and out there, like what is your go-to sweet? What is your chocolate bar? And what are you going to...
It's like The Bachelor.
Right. Yeah. What are you going to eat at 2:30 a.m. On a Thursday when we're flying home from Golden State? I'm like, what? Oh, really? This is what you're asking me? They're like, well, your body fat is 14 and a half. And, you know, we like to be, you know, it's like... It was not the greatest, but yeah, I remember sitting in there kind of looking out the window thinking, God, is this really what it's going to be like? Am I that guy? I had to do like the mirror test. I had to look and be like, okay, this is me. I am this guy. So yeah, doughy. I was pretty doughy. But I always knew, like, if I wasn't on this right now, I would tell you where I was at the time. But it was so funny to hear. And this guy was not in great shape himself. So I was kind of pissed. Thinking, hey, buddy, you might be 30, 40 years my senior, but, you know.
You know, there are people listening to this podcast just going to put it together.
Yeah, maybe.
They'll go back to my draft. Like, where are guys sitting? Who? Maybe. Oh, there it is.
Right.
Okay.
Right. They'll put it together. Maybe.
Well, Kevin, man, congratulations on the year you're having so far. Thanks for doing this. And go have like a kale smoothie or something.
Yeah, thanks. Know. Yeah, I'll make sure.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Kevin Love for joining the show. A reminder, you can check out archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave us a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.